Last October, 64-year-old Tipperary-born Bernard Phelan was arrested in the Iranian city of Mashhad. A travel consultant with joint French and Irish citizenship, he had arrived in the country at a turbulent time. Protesters were taking to the streets over the death in police custody of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, following her arrest for allegedly not wearing the hijab correctly. Phelan, who had been sightseeing with a colleague, was questioned for more than 2 hours. He was then charged with taking photographs of police officers and a mosque and accused of providing information to an enemy country, charges he denied. He would go on to spend 7 months in an Iranian jail. Back home, his family campaigned for his release.
Daddy is going to deliver a letter to the ambassador requesting Bernard's release again.
He was finally released this month, and now he's back in Paris where he lives with his French husband, Roland Bonello. At the weekend, he talked to journalist Lara Marlowe.
How does it feel to be free?
Oh, fantastic. I've never been so happy in certain sides. I'm tired and I'm a bit worn out, but I'm so happy to be with Roland, see family and see my dad.
This is In the News from the Irish Times. I'm Bernice Harrison. Today, Bernard Phelan on captivity, survival and liberation. Lara, Bernard Phelan says that the worst moment was when the judge in his case gave his sentence. How did Bernard describe that?
Well, he had two worst moments, both in the courthouse in Mashhad. The first time was when he went for his first hearing.
The first meeting with the judge, and when I wouldn't sign their documents in Farsi, despite the pressure with a guard, and I just said, no.
Would you sign documents that you didn't understand in English or Irish or French?
And he turned round to his translator and said, you will die in prison, as I walked out of the room.
And the second time was when he was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison, but the judge, a different judge, said, I'm going to ask for clemency because you are in ill health. And so Phelan was taken back to the prison for a week, and then he was taken again, the whole rigmarole, the uniform, the shackles, the handcuffs, back to the courthouse. And instead, the judge said, we're increasing your sentence.
You're not going to get 3.5 years and an amnesty. You're going to get 6.5 years and no amnesty.
What did it feel like?
Not beginning of the end, but, this is pretty bad. That I got really worried.
He thought, I can't survive for 6.5 years in an Iranian prison. I'm going to die in prison.
And what did he tell you about life in jail?
Well, obviously it was miserable, but he was in a cell with about 15 men, foreigners, except for 3 or 4 Iranian political prisoners. One was a Sunni Muslim fundamentalist, very religious guy who got to be quite friendly with. There was a Turk, a Pakistani, several Bahrainis. All the other foreigners were drug dealers. There was also another Frenchman who was there with him. The food wasn't great, as you would expect, I suppose.
It was okay, but it's the same food. It was often cold, not warm, hot. And very salty. So it was so much salted you couldn't eat it.
Had you lost a lot of weight?
It was up and down. I did go on hunger strike for 17 days, which my father asked me to stop.
He said the things that he missed most, he said he missed pork and sausages.
Really. Sausages, pork, sit-down toilet, toilet paper.
Mm.
Alcohol was not big on the list. But it was nature smiling, laughing.
He didn't have anything to read when he was in solitary, which was what made it so hard. And there they gave him 2 guidebooks to Iran, which he said he read over and over and over, backwards and forwards. But in the big prison in Mashhad, books started coming in through the embassy.
Don Quixote.
La Mancha. And this book, the guy, we were in the guard room, said, no, we can't give you this book. It's too dangerous. He was looking, why is it dangerous? You would hit somebody? No, it's not that. He goes, once it gets through security, you can cut a hole in the knives and things and pass it around the prison.
Yeah, it's a good 2 inches thick. He spent most of his exercise periods on the phone because he was allowed to eventually to buy a card with only just a very few phone numbers on it. But he mainly would call the French embassy in Tehran or the Irish chargé d'affaires who works out of the German embassy in Tehran. And he would dictate to them. They would record it and then send it as an email to his husband, Roland Bonello in Paris, or to his father, Vincent, who's 97 years old, who's in Ireland. So he spent every free moment he had basically communicating with his loved ones. Otherwise, it was very, very cold.
Coldest winter in Mashhad for 10 years, I heard since. And there was no... three small radiators in a huge room.
They had to sit on the floor, which was very, very cold, and they devised a system where they would sit on one of their plastic flip-flops. They were not allowed to wear socks for some reason, and they would sit on one flip-flop and put the other flip-flop in front of them and place their feet on top of the flip-flops to sort of insulate themselves from the cold floor. Another interesting aspect of the cell block where he was held, it was cell block 6-1. That was where the prisoners who were going to be hanged in the morning were taken.
Taj,
right,
and five others were taken downstairs into the courtyard by the block director, and he sent three of them back up, including Taj. The other three were executed the next day.
He could very often hear men crying at night, men who were going to be hanged in the morning, which was also very, very sobering.
Lara, you've been writing about Bernard's story from the beginning. And in your early reports, you refer to his husband, Roland Bonello, as his friend because you didn't want Bernard's homosexuality to cause problems for him in Iran. But as it turns out, Bernard's sexuality was not actually a problem for his Iranian captors.
Surprisingly enough, and when I think of the trouble that we went to, his friends warning me, not to betray him and so on. Bernard was interrogated by a man from Tehran, sent specially to question him after he was taken to the prison in Mashhad. And a man whom he called Henri, who spoke perfect French, absolutely perfect French, who he described as being particularly horrible of all of his interrogators. He would correct Phelan's French just to intimidate him. And one of the first questions that this man asked of Bernard Phelan was, "Are you married?" And Phelan said, "Yes." And he said, "What is your wife's name?" And Phelan said, "I have a husband. His name is Roland Bonello." And I was, when he told me this, I was quite surprised. And I said, "Wasn't that very dangerous? Wasn't that, weren't you, taking unnecessary risks by telling him that?" And he said, "No, that for one thing, the Iranians probably knew because they had his phone and they had his computer. But this Henri, as he called him, then started talking about the gay lobby in Europe and how powerful it was.
Ils appellent que le lobby LGBT lobby est très puissant.
And Phelan understood from that this was a card he could play.
It was just really strange. You don't have the reaction you expect. And it's this thing in Iran. Nobody, when we went to stay in hotels, nobody bat an eyelid when you asked for a double room. And I knew for the Iranian image it was bad. They didn't want to be seen to be persecuting gays. And it was another arm in case things got bad.
Mm-hmm. That the Iranians would be afraid of being condemned as homophobic. I mean, they were already facing these mass demonstrations because a woman had died in custody over her hijab. And he figured that the Iranians didn't want to add homophobia, the fact that they had an ailing, aging Irishman in prison. They just didn't want the criticism and the damage to their image that would have implied. And Roland also agreed with him that was probably the case. And I said to Phelan, "So you thought you had three things going for you. You were Irish, because the Iranians have a lot of sympathy for Ireland, and you were ill, and they were afraid of a prisoner going back in a wheelchair or dying in prison. And you were gay." I said, "Which of those had the most influence on your fate. And he said he thought being Irish and being ill were the determinant factors at the end of the day, probably not being gay, but he tries it anyway.
But you didn't tell them that you were that you are half owner of Cox Bar in the Marais, and which is a very militant bar. Can you tell me about the history of your of the bar?
The bar is over 20, nearly 30 years old, 25 years old, and it's a bar that's always defended civil liberties and human rights. We were the first bar to persuade, and we persuaded Amnesty to join the French Gay Pride. We did events for the Ukraine, for other minorities. And I was afraid that that, the fact that we were talking to all these NGOs,
it's okay, the French one.
That would upset the Iranians.
So it wasn't the fact that it's a gay bar, it's the fact that it's a
militant bar out doing on human rights, which I thought was going to be the big problem. Mm-hmm.
You paint a picture of him being all the time trying to figure out, strategizing, figure out how he might, what best card he might play. And since his imprisonment, there was endless campaigning going on to secure his release. There was public statements by both the Irish and French government. And, you know, we understand that there was lots of behind the scenes efforts as well. What do we know about how his release was finally agreed to? Like, what made the Iranians decide to let him go?
We don't know exactly. The Iranian foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, gave an interview to Le Figaro about a week after Phelan and the French other French prisoner who was with him, about a week after they were freed. And Abdollahian said he had negotiated their release in Beijing. I don't know why they were both there, but in Beijing with Catherine Colonna, who's the French foreign minister. And he said there were agreements between us, and part of the agreements had, as a result, the liberation of the two French citizens a few days ago. We don't know what the French gave for the two of them. It's a bit curious that President Emmanuel Macron did not go to the airport, and he has not contacted either of the freed prisoners. Phelan wonders why. He says he's disappointed. I have a French colleague who worked for a long time in Tehran who thinks the French must have given something quite substantial, whether it's money or some kind of political commitment or possibly to free an Iranian prisoner, as the Belgians just did. We don't know. But he thinks that it must have been something very, very substantial, and that perhaps the authorities are quite angry about it in a way. They certainly don't want to encourage any more French people to be taken hostage in Iran. They've got four of them still there. Phelan also said he doesn't know what the contribution of the Irish was. The Irish Department of Foreign Affairs worked very closely with the French because Phelan is, of course, a dual national. But he doesn't know what the share of Irish responsibility and the share of French responsibility in his liberation was.
So the actual day of his release, it was quite dramatic, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, it happened really over 2 days. On Thursday, the 11th of May, Phelan and Benjamin Brière, the other French prisoner, were called to the office of the director of security in the prison.
And Ben said to me, "Ah, I think this is it." And with his hand about it, "This is it, I'm sure."
And they were told that they were about to be freed. Then the prison director, a man called Jahadi, said, "But you must sign this document promising that you will not sue the Iranian state or the prison for ill treatment."
And without even looking at him, he said, "No."
You said that, no.
The two of us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He said, "Go back up to your cell." Okay, back up to your cell.
And they said, "No, absolutely not. We're not going to sign that." And he was angry and said, "Go back to your cell." So they went back to the cell. And Brière, who'd been a hostage or prisoner for more than 3 years, said to Phelan, "I think that they don't have any choice. I think they have to release us. I think this time it could really be it." And both of them actually had huge disappointments earlier when they were promised they would be freed and were not. And sure enough, about 20 minutes later, a guard came and said, "Get your things together, we're going." They were then taken out a side door of the prison, the French ambassador, unknown to them, and a team from the embassy in Tehran and their Iranian lawyer were all waiting for them, had been waiting for them since 7:30 that morning in front of the prison. But instead, they were taken out a side door, they were piled into a car, they were driven around the ring roads of Mashhad for quite some time, and then went down a residential street to an unmarked building, went in. There was an Iranian official who said, "I'm from the foreign ministry. I'm here to process your release." And the Iranian official then called the French ambassador, who somehow found the building. There were a lot of smiles, but he described it as being quite tense. From there, they were taken to a private hospital for more examinations. They saw a cardiologist. And the French ambassador, at some point, Benjamin Briere heard someone say in Farsi, because his Farsi was quite good, that he was going to be rearrested. He told the French ambassador this, and he was so nervous that he insisted that the director of the hospital sleep in the room next to Briere and Phelan that night, their last night in Iran. The next morning, when they went to the airport, they got onto the plane, and the plane was almost moving as the door closed. They were so eager to leave. The pilot said, "It will be 28 minutes before we leave Iranian airspace." The ambassador later told them that he was afraid that someone might actually drive some kind of vehicle in front of the plane as it taxied down the runway to stop it. That's the sort of thing that happens in Iran. And when the 28 minutes were up and the pilot said, "We've done it, we've left Iranian airspace."
Explosions of joy, cheers, everybody had cheers. Three pilots, the plane, tears, the doctor, the nurse, the lady from the kid, I'll say. That was the most fantastic moment, I thought, was when the door opened.
The door of the plane opened, and Bernard Phelan saw his sister Caroline and his husband, Roland Bonello, and both of them said it was just absolutely amazing, incredible to see each other after 7 months.
So Bernard Phelan is free now. He's back home in France, trying presumably to get his health back after more than half a year in jail in very basic, harsh conditions. He says he looks at life differently now. What did he say about how imprisonment has changed his outlook?
He said he wants to live for the moment. That this is an argument he's had with his husband in the past, that his husband's always planning very much for the future. And he said also when you have someone you love, you realize how important it is to spend all of your time with them.
You look at life totally differently after experience. You want to spend the rest of your life together, you know, near each other, and want to be touching each other, and you want to. I always give out to Roland because he's a put off to tomorrow person, and I said, you know, do it now. I have to do everything now. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
An experience like that has to change you. You are not the same person afterwards. It's a pleasure.
That's it for today. For more world coverage, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Bernice Harrison. This episode was produced by Declan Conlon. In the news, we'll be back tomorrow.